Now from the KSFR Newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Friday, November 15th.
Governor Susana Martinez today announced the creation of 47 new jobs at Prime Therapeutics in Albuquerque. The pharmacy benefit management strategies firm is also planning on adding an additional 33 jobs in the near future. The company hired and will train the new workers with the help of the Economic Development Department's Job Training Incentive Program. Governor Martinez credits that program that allows the state to partner with the private sector in providing workforce training for creating jobs such as those announced today. The Public Education Department is giving school districts the okay to develop their own high school graduation requirements after complaints that recent changes might prevent thousands of New Mexico students from graduating. The New Mexican reports that state school officials announced the decision Thursday before a legislative committee. Superintendents across the state had identified problems in how the state counted some elective and workforce training classes in light of a 2008 state law that established graduation standards. Senators Tom Udall and Martin Heinrich are sponsoring a bill to expand the White Sands Missile Range and Fort Bliss. Citing White Sands as a critical and valuable New Mexico asset, the legislation would add some 5,100 acres from the Bureau of Land Management to White Sands' existing expanse. Additionally, the BLM would be prohibited from selling, exchanging, or developing another nearby 35,500 acres. Senator Udall says clarifying the range's boundaries will prevent incompatible future development and facilitate the work done there by the military and NASA. Santa Fe City Hall has issued a summary of the ballot items for a special city election in March to be held in conjunction with the municipal elections. Many of the items expand mayoral powers, including unilateral authority to fire the city's manager, attorney, and clerk. The mayor's job will become a full-time position with a preliminary salary of $74,000 annually, pending future adjustments by an independent salary commission. If passed by voters, the changes will begin in March 2018. Santa Fe City and education leaders in a rare joint meeting Thursday heard from residents with a variety of concerns facing the community. One speaker was Capital High School math teacher Gary Park, who says diagnostic test scores of his incoming students reveal that some 80% don't meet state standards.
Out of the 153 kids I have, six met the standard to be in my, I teach Algebra 1 and Geometry, to be in those classes.
Park stressed that local teachers need money for remediation so kids coming in can meet basic benchmarks. We'll have more details about the Thursday meeting coming up in the feature segment of At Noon, coming up shortly. Governor Martinez has announced that she'll request the state legislature to fix what she views as loopholes in child abuse laws, including a recent court decision narrowing who's required to report suspected cases of abuse and neglect. Martinez outlined her proposals Thursday to a Santa Fe meeting of officials from state child protection agencies. The State Court of Appeals' October ruling said only 10 categories of people listed in law, including physicians and teachers, must report suspected child abuse to authorities. In Washington, New Mexico 1st District Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham took to the House floor Thursday to request support for her Veterans Independent Living Enhancement Act to assist disabled veterans. The Democrat says less than 3,000 veterans nationwide can enroll in the Veteran Administration's successful independent living program each year.
Now, when you compare that to the 2.6 million veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars alone, it is clear that this number is far too low, preventing veterans from getting the services and support they need.
Lujan Grisham says the measure she sponsored would remove impediments to all veterans who would benefit from the independent living program. The State Department of Transportation says New Mexico law enforcement officers will be targeting drunk drivers, speeders, and those who aren't wearing seat belts throughout the holiday season. The DOT says the holiday super blitz starts today and lasts through January 5th. The crackdown coincides with the holidays, since drunken driving crashes increase significantly during this time of year. So far this year, 105 people have died in alcohol-related crashes. That accounts for more than 40% of all fatal crashes in the state during 2013. Weather for Santa Fe, clouds on the increase today with a 40% chance for showers this afternoon, increasing to 60% tonight. Snow levels will be at 8,000 feet and higher with several inches possible. High temperatures today and tomorrow in the low to mid-50s. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices in positive territory. The Dow currently up 56 at 15,932. The NASDAQ is up 6 at 3,979. And the S&P 500 up 3 points. It stands at 1,794. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Celebrate recycling and art at the 15th Annual Recycle Santa Fe Art Festival, November 15th through 17th at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. This green festival brings together artists who transform discarded materials into artistic wonders. The weekend opens with the Trash, Fashion, and Costume Contest and features an art market with juried exhibits. Learn more at recyclesantafe.org. Fashion show tickets at ticketsantafe.com. A message from Keep Santa Fe Beautiful.
10 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. The International Folk Art Market is changing their name to reflect their expanding events and goals. Sean McQueen Ruggiero, the executive director of the organization, is joining us now to talk about it. Sean, tell us about this name change.
The new name will be International Folk Art Alliance, and the alliance will be adopted as of November 18th. The International Folk Art Market Santa Fe will certainly still be our largest program. It is the flagship market, and we certainly are still headquartered here. And that part of what our programs offer as IFAA will certainly still be offered. And the International Folk Art Market Santa Fe is really, you know, how we were born. And we've been able to now develop, and we've offered many other programs that aren't as reflected under a market name. So we believed that the International Folk Art Alliance better reflects the dynamic grassroots nonprofit that we've grown into over these past 10 years. This is what probably many people don't know about what the International Folk Art Market Santa Fe was already doing. We do have what we call the International Folk Art Market Collection, and that is a market that's held in the Dallas Market Center every June. So we've had three markets there the last 3 years, and that market is to help artists learn about the wholesale opportunities for them. And we do offer training while we're in Dallas, similar to the training we do here in Santa Fe, but it's more of an accelerated program for those artists that are hoping to enter the wholesale marketplace.
One concern is that expanding your sites of operation might decrease attendance at the Santa Fe event, but your numbers show that, in fact, attendance has continually risen over the years, correct?
They do. The thing I think everyone hopefully can understand, what was born here in Santa Fe is this remarkable market, unlike any other around the world. And we simply do not have any more space to bring in more artists here for this market. And each year, qualified, amazing, world-class artists are turned away simply due to the fact that there isn't enough space in this market. So in our minds, it's our mission, being allied with the world's folk artists, that we need to provide new opportunities and find opportunities for them. We have this saying sort of around the office that the artists get here and face all these challenges in just even coming here and being able to get their goods here on time. They're so hungry for opportunities that we feel we should be at least as hungry on their behalf to find them new opportunities. There are so many artists in the world that are looking for markets, and we really feel like it's part of our mission to help them find markets. In no way do we think that that will take away from Santa Fe. This market draws in 22,000 people a year, and it is basically at capacity. So we're feeling we're going to still make this the most fantastic flagship market. It's about discovery and new artists. And these other opportunities are different. Like in Dallas, being a wholesale market, in no way do we feel that that's competitive. It's actually an opportunity for artists to grow.
In addition to the name change, you're also redesigning your website. What will the new web address be?
Well, the website will be found at www.folkartalliance.org, and it will be up and running on November 18th on Monday. We have a large mailing going out to all of our donors, volunteers, partners, explaining the name change, and that mailing will drop sometime, hopefully, next week. It was planned for the 18th, so that we can make sure that everybody's brought into this real celebration of our growth, and really so everyone understands why the name has changed. It's certainly in an effort to provide more opportunities for artists, and I think hopefully the website will be dynamic and really help people understand all the different programs we offer.
And tell us about some of the current and new programs you're undertaking.
We have been training artists for years, and now training will really be something we can talk about a little bit more. And we're an organization that really has a unique position in the world that artists are coming to us. We really have a relationship with them, and we're actually able to do hands-on training. Plus, we've had artists that have come for a number of years, and they provide peer-to-peer training. So I think there's many aspects about what we've done in the past that now, this under this new name, we'll be able to talk about a little bit better. And I'm going to tell you two other more exciting things that are coming up. The other new market that will be launched this next year is what we're calling the International Folk Art Market Online. And that is a learning lab where our artists that would like to try to learn wholesale will learn with us. And post-market this year, the Santa Fe market is July 11th, 12th, and 13th. Hopefully on July 14th, we will launch this online market to extend the opportunities for artists to sell their wares. And in the meantime, they'll be trained all year in learning how to make sure that they have quality control and they're able to ship their goods on time and all the things that they're going to need to learn with dealing with other retailers. So we're real excited about this opportunity as well for the artists.
Sean McQueen-Ruggiero, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
The Amigos Bravos free monthly lecture series, Water Matters, will feature solar architectural designer and builder Michael Coca speaking on acequias, solar dew ponds, and greenhouses, a resilient response to climate change. Tuesday, November 19th, 5:30 at the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Info at amigosbravos.org. Amigos Bravos, because water matters, is a tax-exempt organization restoring and protecting New Mexico's waters for 25 years.
17 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The conservation of water is often on the minds of New Mexicans. A planned pipeline in southwestern New Mexico, called the Gila River Diversion Plan, is drawing fire from several individuals and groups. Jason Amaro is on the board of the New Mexico Wildlife Federation and joins us now. Jason, let's begin by having you explain to us what the Gila Diversion Project is.
The diversion project of the Gila. It's kind of one of those ideas, every idea is not a good idea. Basically, 2014 is a deadline to come up with a proposal to pipe water out of the Gila River, which is in the Gila wilderness. Pipe water to, we're not real sure yet. No one's really kind of stepped up and said, hey, we want the water. But they're thinking about piping the water to either Silver City, Deming, Las Cruces, Albuquerque, or even directly into the Rio Grande.
Why is this being proposed?
Just basically, water is a precious commodity. Everybody kind of wants water. Silver City is kind of a smaller community, so sometimes we feel like we're getting steamrolled. But they want to use water for just the regular uses, whether it be golf courses, housing development, to pay off Texas, because we owe Texas a lot of water. So it's just kind of to contribute to the overall aquifer of the state of New Mexico.
And your organization, the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, as well as a number of others, have major concerns about this project, correct?
Well, first of all, it's going to be super expensive. Super expensive. We have heard everything from $100 million to $200 million. That's just for building the pipe itself. So when you take into account all the litigation, all that good stuff, it's going to take hundreds of millions of dollars just to get this built. So that's just kind of the cost behind it all. And in all honesty, we really don't know what the end cost will be. But also, we have to worry about the downstream effects of the river. We have to worry about how it's going to impact the communities in New Mexico. communities in Arizona because the Gila River actually flows in Arizona, and the San Carlos Apache Reservation. So we've got the money, we have the political issues that we have to resolve, and there's a whole bunch of, I shouldn't say a whole bunch, there's a few endangered species that live in the Gila River. We need to figure out how we're going to handle those, and also as a recreationist and sportsman, as someone who gets out in the outdoors, how are we going to balance wildlife and hunting and fishing and hiking and all that good stuff. So it's a big issue. There's a lot of people involved. I'll be honest and say that I'm pretty proud of our coalition. This is the first time in a long time where I've seen organizations like Trout Unlimited, the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, hunting and fishing groups really come together and say, wait a minute, we really, really need to think about this because it's going to have a lot of impacts on a lot of people. So it's good to see a lot of people come together.
How did this proposal come about?
Steve Pierce here in southern New Mexico and John Arthur Smith, they basically put this proposal before the legislature. Basically, something has to be done or there has to be a decision by December 2014. So originally, John Arthur Smith said, well, I really don't think this water bill is going to go anywhere, but we need to get the conversation started, so let's get the ball rolling. It's kind of scary when you do that. I mean, there's other ways to get the conversation started. So it's been pretty interesting how this whole thing has kind of got started. It was an attempt to get the conversation started. And now we need to make sure that it doesn't grow legs, as we say, and really take off. We need to make sure that sure we can look at it, but, you know, ultimately we do not want to ship water, you know, out of the Gila wilderness to these outlying communities like Demin or Silver City or Las Cruces, which are sometimes 100-plus miles away.
And we understand there has been extensive polling on this issue. What have the results been?
They basically say that 70% of New Mexicans polled think this is a bad idea. 85% think that, hey, before we start building pipes, how about we use the water we have more wisely? I mean, we live in a desert. Do we really need another golf course? So the numbers are out there that totally support the fact that people do not want this. So it's really good to see. You know, it's, like I said, it's a broad coalition of people. I mean, it's truly our government or democracy or people working the government. It's pretty good. It's neat to see that we're all coming together on this issue.
And what actions does your group, as well as the other groups you've mentioned, have planned for today?
So we're really hitting the airwaves, we're hitting the radio stations, we're hitting the news stations. I have a website called thenewmexicosportsman.com that I'm getting the information out there. We are delivering a letter to the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission. We're also delivering a letter to Governor Martinez. We're also talking to some of the governor candidates to say, hey, these are one of the issues, let's talk about them. So we're really trying to get the word out there. Like I said, Trout Unlimited, yesterday morning, I believe, or maybe this morning, is taking a letter to Governor Martinez basically saying, let's not do this. And there's a whole bunch of reasons behind it, everywhere from protecting the last free running stream to, you know, protecting the Gila trout, you know, protecting the elk and the deer and just our canoeing rivers. So it's a really good all-out press to really get the information out there. If people want to talk about it, they can get a hold of me, again, at thenewmexicosportsman.com. Give me a call. You know, I'm open for ideas. I think the big thing right now is we're going to focus on conservation of the water we do have. Let's take care of what we do have before we start worrying about shipping water across New Mexico.
Anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Just basically stay tuned. But more importantly, get out there and enjoy the Gila wilderness. Enjoy the Pecos. Go fishing. Go hiking. Get out there and have a good time.
Jason Amaro from the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, many thanks for joining us here today at noon on KSFR.
The Santa Fe Art Institute presents SFAI 140, one evening, 20 inspiring talks, 140 seconds each. Join SFAI for an evening of creativity and conversations, November 21st, 7 p.m. Learn more at sfai.org. or call 424-5050. A message from the tax-exempt Santa Fe Art Institute.
23 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. 1 week from today, Friday, November 22nd, the nation and the world will note 50 years passing since the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The events of that day back in 1963 are forever emblazoned in the minds of all Americans alive at that time, with most people being able to precisely give all the details of where they were and what they were doing when they first heard the news. KSFR reporter Joe Day is no exception.
I'm Joe Day. We all are right now in the throes of a torrent of media coverage of the 50th anniversary, if that's the right word, anniversaries usually are positive events, of the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. There are some of us who can recall that day, November 22, 1963, and the days that followed. I happen to be one of them. I was in the midst of changing jobs as a young reporter from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin Journal to the Providence, Rhode Island Journal Bulletin. In fact, I had gone to the Milwaukee paper's cashier's office to pick up my last paycheck when one of the most experienced reporters dashed to the office to pick up some cash to enable him to get to Dallas to cover the story. He said that the president had been shot and probably was dead. I went home to my wife Nancy and our one-year-old son Peter to start our journey eastward, which we did. Our old car didn't have much of a radio, so we learned at a gas station or somewhere that Jack Ruby had shot and killed Lee Harvey Oswald, who'd been apprehended for the president's murder. It was hard to believe all these things were happening. We were confused and frightened until the facts became more clear. We spent the next few days in front of a television set, black and white, of course, at the home of relatives on our way, watching the events, among them the funeral of a murdered president of the United States. Who can forget the sorrowful image of his wife and young daughter kneeling before his flag-covered casket? To those listeners who were not yet born or were too young to have experienced those days, it naturally will be impossible to understand the utter shock and disbelief of the assassination. To some of us and millions around the world, it was inconceivable that such a thing should have occurred. If we were naive, if much of the nation was naive, so be it. Our collective innocence was lost, I feel, never to be retrieved. Regardless of people's view of John Kennedy, the man, and his presidency, the national sense of sorrow and grief was overwhelming. Some have tried to imagine an America had Kennedy lived, but to me that seems a useless exercise. He did not live, and we will never know what might have been. We also probably will never know the truth of the murder itself, what really happened, whether Oswald acted alone, whether there was a wider conspiracy. That, too, probably will remain a mystery. But what is known, I feel, is that for those who lived in those dark days, they will never, ever be forgotten. Even today, in this time of remembering, there remains for some of us a deep and enduring sense of loss. I'm Joe Day.
Next Friday, November 22nd, at noon, we'll host a panel discussion with familiar KSFR voices who will add their own personal stories of remembrance. Please join us for that, our special I Remember commemoration of the passing of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, our nation's 35th and youngest ever president of the United States, felled by an assassin's bullet 50 years ago.
Support comes from MexicanWolves.org, inviting the public to attend a sidewalk rally and public hearing on proposals that will help decide the fate of the endangered Mexican wolf in America's Southwest. This Wednesday, November 20th, at the Embassy Suites Hotel on Woodward Place Northeast in Albuquerque. For more information about Wednesday's rally, the public hearing, and related events taking place that day, visit MexicanWolves.org. That's MexicanWolves.org.
28 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Like many states, New Mexico has been dealing with a significant number of preterm births and birth defects. Now, thanks to the work of physicians and the march of dimes, the rates are improving. Here is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
The number of preterm births and children born with birth defects has decreased a bit in New Mexico, thanks in a large part to the effort of the New Mexico March of Dimes. Dr. Abraham Lickmacher is the Chief of Women's Services for the Loveless Health System.
Well, I'm a physician who certainly follows the March of Dimes policies and certainly follows some of the good work that they've done in trying to reduce premature deliveries. The March of Dimes produces a report card that is issued for every state in the country that tallies the number of premature births that have occurred. And New Mexico just received their report card, and we gathered a grade of C, which sounds okay, and it actually is pretty good because we've improved from the previous year and we're at the same level as the rest of the country as a whole.
He says that education has been the key to the changes.
And the grade of C actually indicates that we've, in New Mexico, we have about 11.5% of babies born too early, prematurely, if you will. And that's down from previous years. In fact, we've been on a downward trend over the last 6 years, which is in contradistinction to the previous 20 years where the trend had been going up. And there are several areas that are being focused on to try to reduce this. One of them is certainly patient education. The other areas are reducing cigarette smoking. It's sort of getting patients into the best habits possible. One of the areas that's also being targeted is trying to reduce the number of patients who are uninsured, the reproductive age group that is uninsured. So there are certainly several areas that seem to account for much of this reduction.
To help assure our state can continue the good work, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation has awarded New Mexico a large grant.
The Kellogg Foundation is one of the largest charitable foundations in the country, and they've actually partnered with the March of Dimes by providing this substantial grant. I believe it's just under $1 million. And the purpose of that grant is to help the local New Mexico chapter of the March of Dimes to spread the news and educate patients. They've targeted several counties, and I couldn't tell you off the top of my head which ones will be targeted, but essentially it will be several counties where we see the highest premature birth rates. We do know that patients who are receiving folic acid supplementation, particularly very early in the pregnancy, and in fact probably best started before the pregnancy occurs, have a lower incidence of birth defects. This has been a factor that's been known medically for quite some time, and birth defects are unfortunately also one of those contributing factors to premature births. So trying to reduce that incidence certainly is helpful. It is actually very inexpensive. Folic acid is available in many foods. In fact, if you read labels on food products, many foods are fortified with folic acid. But we actually recommend that patients who are contemplating pregnancy, who are planning for pregnancy, actually get a supplement. You can get this over the counter without a prescription. And the dosing that we're looking for patients to take is 400 micrograms of folic acid on a regular daily basis. And the real significant message here is plan for the pregnancy and start the folic acid before you actually begin to try for pregnancy, because it's important to be on it when you actually conceive.
The March of Dimes has set goals for 2020 to further decrease premature birth and birth defects from a rate of 11.5% annually to 9.5%.
And in fact, that's the target goal for 2020 for the nation as a whole. There are some states that have gotten close to that and have actually achieved that, and those are the states that receive that grade A on the report card. As I mentioned earlier, New Mexico, we're in a grade C, so we're sort of on average with the rest of the country. We're about halfway through the list of the states, but there are about five states that have actually received a grade A, which means they're getting close to that national goal for 2020.
Dr. Lickmacher feels that is a realistic goal.
Well, I think we're certainly on the right trend. We've certainly been improving over the last 6 years, and I think that we have a long way to go, but I think we have programs in place that are certainly geared to getting us to that. I certainly do hope that we get to that. I think we have a good chance of doing that. I think that we need to spread the message to patients to plan for the pregnancies. The two important factors that I tell patients, in addition to the folic acid that I mentioned earlier, get yourself in the best shape you possibly can and get rid of those bad habits, most notably cigarette smoking. Cigarette smoking has been identified as one of those risk factors for premature births. And get in to see your practitioner early so that if you do have risk factors for premature birth, you can be identified as such, and there are treatment options that are available to try to reduce that risk.
Dr. Abraham Lickmacher from the Loveless Health System.
Well, I think that, as I mentioned earlier, you know, as New Mexico, we are on the right track. We're doing the right thing. And those points that I mentioned, plan for your pregnancy. That's the most important thing I can mention. Unfortunately, all too often, you know, pregnancies generally tend to go well. But unfortunately, as we mentioned in the statistics, sometimes those babies just don't want to stay in for the duration. So plan things out. Don't let it be an accident. Plan things out and get to your provider early on.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
34 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The governing bodies of both the City of Santa Fe and Santa Fe School District met in a joint meeting Thursday. Rejoining us here now at the news desk is my KSFR News colleague, Tom Trowbridge. Now, Tom, you informed us that such joint meetings are relatively rare, correct?
Yes, Dan. In fact, people at both the city and school district couldn't recall any recent such joint meetings. And many people took advantage of the get-together to discuss issues of concern that affect both entities. Santa Fe School Superintendent Joel Boyd opened the meeting with the following remarks.
We're really proud of the work that we've been able to do with in collaboration with the city to support our children. We can't have a world-class city unless we have a world-class school system. And I've been really proud to be a part of the work, collaborating with the city, collaborating with our community, and working to make our schools work for our children. So I'm looking forward to sharing what that partnership looks like with the community, and I'm just really excited about the opportunity that today brings for all of us.
Chris Sanchez, chair of the Santa Fe Children and Youth Commission, spoke to the issue of educational services for students on long-term suspensions or those who are first-time criminal offenders. Sanchez said he met recently with Children's Court Judge Marlo Summers, who observed a lack of programs for those students.
We looked at this as an opportunity that we can address this gap. Not too short after my arrival to the Children and Youth Commission, Counselor Dominguez reached out immediately and wanted to talk about some of the goals and ideas that he has, particularly addressing the needs within the south side of Santa Fe and through the rest of Santa Fe in terms of education, vocational, and apprenticeship programs. Counselor Dominguez tasked us with looking into these issues facing our kids, particularly those kids who are at high risk of dropping out or who have disconnected from the school and or the community.
Another speaker, teacher's aide Matt Wilcox, spoke of the need for building trades and vocational education programs.
We have a tremendous need for them here in the state of New Mexico and all over the country for that matter. We're losing the talented people that we had. Our contractors are retiring. And we need those classes. We need classes that support those kind of programs at Santa Fe High School in this school system. It's ridiculous to think that we're going to have plumbers and electricians and carpenters when we don't have any place for them to learn except at the community college now.
Capital High School math teacher Gary Park shared a problem he and other teachers face. He said diagnostic test scores of his incoming students revealed that some 80% don't meet state standards. And that prompted Park to question the school district spending resources on the International Baccalaureate School instead of remediation.
What kind of caught me was a baccalaureate international school when we need money spent for teachers to do remediation. So maybe that these kids coming in will meet the standards. Out of the 153 kids I have, 6 met the standard to be in I teach Algebra 1 and Geometry, to be in those classes. And I just think that the money, I don't know, baccalaureate school sounds good, makes the city look good, but we really need the students to have the skills needed to get through the math class.
During official business at the Joint School Board and City Council meeting, both bodies approved a resolution declaring a commitment to working together to make Santa Fe a world-class city with a system of world-class schools. For KSFR, I'm Tom Trowbridge.
12:38 here in the newsroom, way past the bottom of the hour. It's definitely time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Barack, Barack, what were you thinking? Before proceeding, the obligatory but not surprising disclaimer, I voted for Obama twice and I'll vote for Hillary if she runs. But geez Louise, Barack, Why would you spend an extreme amount of political capital by almost force-feeding a controversial social program on the United States, which incidentally increased political divisions and grew more nuts for the Tea Party? How could you do all that and not make sure that at least the enrollment process worked? How do you do that? What, like two people have been able to successfully enroll online for the Affordable Care Act? Sometimes people can learn to like what they didn't want if what they didn't want turns out to be good for them. But if they can't get to the point to find out if what they didn't want is good for them, what's the point? It pains me to say this, but the unresponsiveness of registering for the Health Care Act is, well, anemic. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagan.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard, Tom Trowbridge, and Joe Day. We'll be back on Monday with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us. Tune in tomorrow for Weekend at Noon, where we revisit some of the feature stories we looked at this week.